Make sure Jeremiah is recording, excuse me, our attendants and our guests. Welcome, Janina. I know that I just saw you join. And so with that, I call the meeting to order and I ask for a motion to approve the agenda.
I motion to approve the agenda, Denise Berger.
Thank you, Denise. Do I have a second?
I second Zena.
Zena, thank you. So I'll just go down. Zena.
Aye.
Madhu.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. Agenda has been approved. I will turn it over to Farnaz for the opener.
Well, also, I forgot to mention, in the interest of time and to stick to our commitment to make this a short meeting, we're going to skip the opener today. I did want to just tell you guys that this is like a short special meeting that we scheduled solely to get some compliance elements approved and to update you on things because things are changing quite rapidly right now. But for that reason, we're going to keep it especially short. And then we'll have a longer meeting next time where we focus on our strategic priorities benchmark chart and LCAP. So with that, Anthony, I hand it back to you for the presentations.
Okay, great. Thank you. Are there any presentations from the floor for non-agenda items? Okay. Are there any presentations from the floor on agenda items? Okay. Then I'll think I turn it back over to Farnaz to discuss the reports.
So I'm going to actually ask Jen Fenton to go first. So we're switching the agenda ever so slightly because so much of what's on our strategic priorities benchmark chart will make more sense after her health and safety presentation. So Jen, do you want to, can you please share screen and share
Jeremiah is going to be a screen share extraordinaire and I'm going to walk through it.
Awesome.
All right. Hello, everyone. Oh, what a wild January this has been.
Jeremiah, can you do slideshow?
Sure. Is that better?
That's good. All right. Next slide, please. Oh, that's not the slide presentation, but that's okay. We're going to, Jeremiah, do you have the slide presentation that I sent you yesterday or today?
I think so. Let me stop my screen sharing for a minute.
Okay. I'm going to talk because we can go through the first couple of slides with me just talking. It's the next couple, you know, the next couple of slides that I really want to have you guys take a look at. So if I can transport you back to last year, I want to recap some of the policies and protocols we already had in place to keep our students and our staff safe even before reopening in August. So our HVAC systems were upgraded and filters were changed regularly. We consistently cleaned the campus, including frequently touched areas, and we continue to do so now daily. We had signs posted throughout our sites reminding people to keep their distance, and we encourage teachers to keep seating charts because that really does help with contact tracing, which is something that ECS has done even before it was required by Department of Public Health. Sanitizer is readily available and people are encouraged to wash their hands frequently. And finally, although we don't have a mandate, we continue to advocate for vaccines every chance we get. And we've hosted several Pfizer clinics on our various campuses, including the middle school at Inglewood, the middle school in Gardena, and the high school at Lawndale. And we have additional vaccine clinics in the works. We're just waiting for the surge to sort of slow down before we bring additional people onto campus. Okay. The next, we're going to fast forward now. And these are safety measures that are in place, and they've really helped us navigate the recent surge. RoofNut is one of those entry-level self-screeners that reminds humans to take stock of their current conditions or their symptoms. Questions are guided by LADPH rules, and they do change frequently. So current prompts that we have you tested positive in the last 5 days, or have you traveled outside of California, which reminds people whether or not they should be on campus. We also ask about symptoms, sore throat, cough, fever, prevalent symptoms that could indicate whether or not someone has COVID. Our health and safety coordinators regularly monitor answers on the back end, and they check to see if somebody who shouldn't be on campus is actually on campus. As you can see from the data below, and this is for this week, the Ruvna app is predominantly used by our staff and our teachers, but we do have students using it with high frequency as well. Masks are that mid-level safety measure that continue to keep people safe. Since August, ECS has had a policy that everyone on campus must wear a face covering both indoors and outdoors. So at the end of the year, when LADPH put these new rules in place, it's something we had already been doing. Nothing really changed. The one thing that did change was on December 31st, staff and students are now required to wear an upgraded face covering. And that includes your surgical mask, your KN95, and your N95. All staff were provided with new PPE that met the requirements, and there's an ample supply of surgical masks for our students in classrooms and the front office should someone need one. Our regular testing model is really that top level safety procedure that's kept our campuses open and, knock on wood, free from outbreaks. If you remember in August, we began regular testing. So first it was baseline testing, and then we moved into random sampling, where approximately 35 students from the middle school and 50 to 55 students at the high school were asked to take PCRs daily. Our staff also participated in regular once a week PCR testing, regardless of their vaccination status, and they were required to take a COVID test twice a week if they were unvaccinated. Then Omicron surge happened, and while our testing plan was already really good, we quickly pivoted to rapid testing, knowing that the new variant was more contagious. The first thing we did was procure rapids. And while LAGO provided us with some, it certainly wasn't enough. It's really because of Jeremiah that we've been able to maintain this steady supply of tests. And we say this all the time, and I want to do it right now with the board watching. Huge kudos and thank you to Jeremiah, because without him, honestly, we could not test all students and all staff at the level that we're doing. So thank you, Jeremiah. The question we then next get asked is, why did we move from PCRs to rapids? And there's a few reasons. The first is we actually had the luxury of starting school in January, a week after other districts. So we could learn from their experience. We were seeing that labs were being inundated with PCRs. So what normally took about 2 to 3 days to get results now turned into a week, 8, 9, 10 days to learn if someone was positive. At that point, the data actually becomes somewhat obsolete based on new quarantine rules that say you have to isolate for at least 5 days. And then what happens is more spread occurs. Rapids give you results in 15 minutes. They also have the ability to tell us if somebody is positive or contagious. And based on current research, we know that COVID is most transmissible 2 days before symptoms occur and 3 days after they appear. So by looking at someone who's either testing negative or positive, we can keep people who have COVID or COVID's percolating in their body, we can keep them off our campuses and prevent spread. And then another reason we moved to rapids is because of LADPH. They were approving this use of testing in our schools, and they were in fact advocating, again, because results were coming back in 15 minutes rather than that week to 10 day delay that we were seeing with PCRs. So before our students and staff went back to school on January 11th, we required everyone to take a rapid test on campus. And we didn't stop there. We tested all students and staff again on January 12th, and then we tested all students and staff again after the 3 day weekend on January 18th. Staff continue to test once a week with their rapids, and we're continuing to administer rapids to our entire student body this week and next week through February 4th. But we're testing by grade levels now. It was very cumbersome and very onerous on the entire sites to test everybody at once. And what this new testing plan does by testing per grade, it essentially treats all of our students as if they're a close contact, and it allows us to prevent on-campus transmission by having this regular testing plan. As you know, I'm on the Board of Trustees for Manhattan Beach Unified School District, so I'm in regular communication with other members of boards in Hermosa, Redondo, Palos Verdes, El Segundo, and Torrance. And this is above and beyond what any other district has done. But it took an incredible amount of work. And I really have to say thank you and give a huge shout out to our principals, our health and safety coordinators, and various staff, including HR. Sarah, you were on site for, a week. Admin, social workers who stepped in to effectively become public health experts. And I'm so grateful for these teams who congregated on site every morning at 7:15 because they helped keep everyone safe and our campuses open. And that old saying, it takes a village, could not have been more true in the last couple of weeks. The next slide is just a quick illustration that explains the new quarantine rules and what happens if somebody tests positive for COVID, regardless of vaccination status. The day you test positive, we count as day one. You have to quarantine for at least 5 days. On day six, if you're asymptomatic, you're allowed to come back and take another COVID test. And if that test yields negative results, you can return to campus, but you're required to wear a mask for at least 10 days. We've seen people come back on day six, and we've seen people who have taken the full 10 days to come back. But these are the rules that we have to follow according to Los Angeles Department of Public Health. And the next slide is just a snapshot of our testing results beginning January 10th through January 25th. Just an FYI, on our required all-site testing days, if you didn't come to school, for example, on January 10th, then you were not allowed to step foot on campus January 11th until you took a rapid test. So that's why you're seeing those blocks of time. We are tracking everyone. We have lots of charts, lots of, grids. And we took a hard line saying no test, no school. And I know it does seem a little abrupt, but it allowed us to keep everyone safe. And what I want you to focus on is the data from right after winter break until this week. We started out with 13 positive staff members and almost 10% of our student body testing positive. This week, we had 4 members test positive on campus and only 2% of our students test positive. That's huge. And what it's evident is that we're moving in the right direction, which is wonderful, but also that our safety measures are working. And I'm so thrilled with what we've been able to do in such a short amount of time. And I thank everyone for their assistance. Are there any questions? I know I talk quickly.
Actually, quick question.
Yeah.
Those who tested positive, for example, in 118 to 120, were they tested the following week? Are there 29 new cases and those 77 are at home?
So those are actually new cases that's being reported. But if you wanted to come back on day six before that 10-day official quarantine ended, you did have to retest and get a negative test result. But those are not included in those test results. These are new cases.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? All right. Thanks, everybody, for letting me present.
Thank you, Jen. I also just really want to appreciate the fact that Jen has worked tirelessly these last months. She's been doing such a phenomenal job, and it really shows in the works. So I just really appreciate you. But also, Sarah, Jeremiah, all of us have actually been based at campuses supporting the testing efforts and I'm just incredibly grateful for our team and home office people who've stepped up to do it. So thank you. Our principals are wiped, as you can imagine. And so I've told them they do not need to be here tonight, especially for such a short meeting. But they were all willing to come, and I just want to appreciate them and respect them in their absence. And balancing life and work in this crazy world is near impossible, and we have to set our limits whenever possible. So I try to do that on their behalf. There's a lot of deadlines happening right now. So if you look at the strategic priorities benchmark chart that I just sent you and it's in your inboxes, you'll see that some of them are a month off. And the reason for that is that our amazing data manager, Robert Maxwell, is intensely busy doing all sorts of reports like our SARC report and our LCAP prep and all these reports that are due at this moment in the next week or so to LACO and to Lawndale. So what's important to note is that even though the data on that chart is not up to date, we're looking at all that data in multiple places. We just haven't had a chance to update it. I wanted to tell you that LACO this week let us know that they have one charter school that they're going to be choosing for their whole board to go visit, and that they've chosen environmental charter schools. And the reason that they said for that was that of all of the charter schools with all of their petitions, ECS is the one that truly fulfills its mission most assertively and sit and its charter most assertively. It's not just words, but that we actually work to fulfill our mission. Allison, I'm sorry, I hadn't told you yet. So it's very
<That's> amazing.
Super exciting. Been involved in a lot of advocacy recently. Earlier this week, I've been calling Senator Allen's office because Senator Allen set a bill forward to do ADA hold harmless. So if you guys may know that district schools are being held harmless for absences right now associated with COVID, charter schools are not. His bill was initially only going to do a hold harmless for attendance for next year, but due to some advocacy from multiple charter leaders and myself, he did shift the bill to include charter schools for this year, which is really exciting. Whether or not it passes, we're all very optimistic and hopeful, because in all of our efforts to increase attendance, which are significant, I mean, the number of emails and efforts to call parents and get students back for testing on day 5 instead of day 10, it's really a hard effort. On top of that, providing independent study programming, a lot of appreciation for Danielle and Michael Martucci and all of the instructional coaches and the team dedicated to independent study. But the reality was that we went from 6 regular kids on independent study to 20, 30 kids on independent study to 150 kids on independent study after the holiday. It just shot right up. And that was a lot of work. So we're doing our best to get as many kids as we can back on campuses. And you can see that in our data trends that we watch daily, but unfortunately we're not there yet. And so an ADA hold harmless would be really powerful. Two things that are really exciting also is that you guys know that we became a charter school growth fund funded organization recently. That's the partnership that led us to EFF for the loans. And what's really exciting is that they wanted to recognize us for two things already. One of them is the strategic priorities benchmark chart. They've asked me to present on it at an upcoming gathering. They hadn't seen anything like it. It really excited them. And so we're going to be presenting that to other charter school leaders. They also invited us to come and talk about our confronting anti-Blackness and racism efforts for all of the charter leaders, which they said that a lot of people started things, but they didn't see anyone who continued and pushed through on their efforts in the way that we have. And they're really proud of it. And it, you know, it's really hard to accept that we've done anything well in this area, because we've really been focused on health and safety. But people are saying that they feel a difference on our campuses as a result of the conversations we had last year, and we're continuing again now. And it's also noticeable on our advisory surveys. Our Black and African American students are reporting higher levels of satisfaction with our schools than ever before. And so that's really exciting. Another data point that you don't see on there, which I'm extremely proud of, is that we've seen significant improvement in satisfaction levels with home office team leadership. And I give a lot of appreciation to the leaders that you see here for all of their hard work. A special kudos to Sarah, because the HR experience has shifted significantly here. And I just want to appreciate all these leaders. For the first time, we have higher than 90% approval ratings from our entire organization about home office services. So more on the strategic priorities benchmark chart soon. Any questions on anything I talked about?
Just really quick, in terms of hold harmless, from my understanding, we're not being held harmless for ADA. We're doing the same scramble that you all are, that we are doing independent study to try to, I've heard some things to try to mitigate it by having schools take or districts take an average of their ADA.
But we don't even get to take the average of ADA. Uh-huh. So that's what his bill is going to do, is allow us to do what you guys get to do. Unfortunately, charter schools, it's entirely based on the exact number of students who we mark present.
I just had a quick question about the independent study, that the numbers went up. Does that have anything to do with having to do more testing? like, or they're just testing fatigue and they're like, I'm just going to stay home and do independent study? Or does that have any sort of...
Well, form? We tested on the first few days. I sent you guys all the benchmark charts daily. I mean, if we've ever lived a benchmark chart, it's been our health and safety dashboard that I send almost every other day to all staff and every week to board. Like, this is like a true dashboard that everybody's watching. But in the first days after the holiday, we had a lot of positives. And so a lot of the independent study increases associated with the significant number of students who tested positive. But then it continued because some of those kids who tested positive on the first day back didn't come back after 5 days. They didn't come back to test. They didn't come back to test on, they didn't come back even on day 10. So there's been a push to get all of those students back and to get them off of independent study. But we are seeing a significant improvement in attendance. And at this point, we're above 90% at all of our campuses. Inglewood saw a little bit of a dip, but we're getting there. Yes, that's short-term ISP. Thank you, Beth. So independent study, we have long-term independent study, which we had 6 students on. And these are short-term ISP students who will hopefully return within 15 days. Okay, with that, I hand off to Allison. Thank you, Allison.
All right. Am I on mute? I
don't know. No, you're not. You are not on mute.
All right. So now I got to figure out. All right. So Jeremiah, are you going to share for me like you did, or should I share?
I have them ready. I can share.
You share then. That would be awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
And I am going to ask Anthony if you could kick off this presentation.
Yes, I will. First of all, I just want to say fantastic job, Jen, in your presentation and your explanation. Your competence, your confidence, your communicative approach is fantastic. And for now, to you and your staff, I mean, what you just described and the accomplishments and the acknowledgement of the school is fantastic. So congratulations. There's some just amazing great news. So with that, I'll start by saying we have yet another fantastic opportunity from a real estate perspective. As you know, we have our new high school and had some great news related to that. And as many of you may know, we have an opportunity to expand with the Gardenia Middle School. And I just wanted to kick this off by saying, Allison has been working very hard with this, and the MCP board, Menlo Charter Properties Board, which just as a reminder, involves Ken, John Queter, Bruce, myself, and Janina. We have been discussing at length this expansion opportunity. And I know Ken's not on today, but Janina is. And then we moved it to the Facilities Committee, and we discussed it at length with the Facilities Committee. And as a reminder, Janina is on that committee. Myself, as board members, are on that committee. And, both the committee and the board, MCP board, feels very strong about this opportunity and recommends this opportunity. So I just want to start that off by letting everyone on the call know that there's been a lot of discussion on this expansion and a lot of review, and both those entities have reviewed it and supported it. And so as we go through that, just keep that in mind. So I'll turn it back over to Allison to go through some more detail on it.
Thanks, Anthony. We've been, as a site, as a school site, we've been looking at the middle school in Gardena and what the facility needs. It was finished in 2013. And so there's annual maintenance items that we've been working to improve since we first built it. Some of those things are listed here for you. We've also looked at some larger future maintenance goals, which are listed there. And then we also dream about like additional square footage on that site for outdoor spaces. The buildings that we have there are beautiful and they have lots of space inside, more than our other campuses, but the outdoor spaces have always been a little bit shy of what we would like to see for a middle school campus. And so we've traditionally looked to the YMCA and the Boys and Girls Club for additional space. We even partnered with the site that we are proposing to convert into a park over the years. And we are currently leasing that space from its current owner. So we're excited about this new opportunity that's arisen. And Janina's gonna share a little bit more about the opportunity.
Thank you, Allison. First, I'd like to continue a conversation that Anthony shared with you all that, again, we're speaking from a place of this has already gone through a couple of different committees. I've been part of that facilities committee, but I've also been someone who has actually visited the Gardena Middle School. And so when we look at the opportunity that we are seeing, it is to purchase a site which is across the street. It's at 809 and 813 West 165th Place. This used to be a church. What you see in this image here is looking also at the basketball courts. Allison mentioned that we had partnered previously with the Boys and Girls Club. If we can go ahead and move over to the next slide. What we are reimagining is a passive park. This passive park would obviously be in support of our Green Ambassador program, as well as our outdoor community educational opportunities. It would provide lunch areas as well as after-school programming. You know, it's needless to say, this would be an enormous value to the community at large as well. We would provide, you know, activities and access after school, I'm sorry, during non-school hours, and adopt any kind of MOUs necessary, you know, to maintain the safety of this particular space. The structure that you see in this image, it's something that, you know, we're continuously working with our partners, and it's not necessarily something that we're going to be pursuing right now until the time is right and the funding is there. That's something that we are looking forward to implementing and developing.
Thank you, Janina.
Thank you.
So why does ECMSG want this space? Farnaz, I know you've done a lot of thinking about this with the site leader, Dave, and I thought you could talk a little bit about this slide.
What's core to all of this is ECS's mission and our ability to connect students to outdoor education. And right now, Gardena is the campus that has the lowest student to space ratio of any of our campuses. And that lack of space is real, it has a negative impact on our students and their ability to play. It's really hard to walk through the campus without the risk of being hit by a football, or kids are constantly bumping into each other, especially during this time in COVID. It's been really hard to keep the physical distancing in place at that campus, much harder than any other of our campuses. And our outdoor education teacher, in addition to our Green Ambassador teacher, they really don't have the space to explore that our other campuses do have. And this is going to offer us an opportunity to meet our mission, to keep our students safe, and to better serve the students and families in our community, both through our own programming on that park and hopefully through partnerships with the city, delivering more services to the broader community in a public park setting.
So Farnaz mentioned the square footage and the site footprint. So this is just a slide that kind of highlights that ECMSG and the orange, without the acquisition of this site, has about an average of 110 square feet per student. In comparison to the other sites, you can see each of our other sites have significantly more square footage per student. So the acquisition of this part brings us up closer to the other sites, but still not there. And so it's with the partnership of the Boys and Girls Club and other spaces that we can start to ink up to what ECMSI has per square foot for a middle school student. And then the next slide shares with you that ECMSG does have almost, it currently will have or currently has more square footage per student of built space. So you don't hear ECMSG complain as much about not having enough office space, et cetera, where other campuses are complaining about the lack of office space. So that's kind of the distinguishing mark about this particular campus. Affordability, can we afford this? And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tracy to talk a little bit about affordability of this project.
Thanks, Allison. So we are already in process, as I think you all know, of underwriting a loan with the Equitable Facilities Fund to take out two of our other loans for ECMSG and ECMSI's facilities, and also to purchase the facility in which ECHSG is going to locate, well, is already located and paying a lease on. So that financing was already underway, and they had already approved us up to a higher amount than we actually needed quite yet. And given the timing of it all, and that the facilities committee in Menlo seemed amenable, we went ahead and included this project into that financing, into the underwriting process, in order to be able to have it there, because the deadlines made it such that we had to add it in. So we already know that we have the financing approved for the purchase price, so it could be fully financed for the school. Because of the way we're structuring the leases, because of the funding that's called SB 740 that helps pay for our facilities, we already, right now, ECMSG is already paying its rent at a level that maximizes that funding. And so we intend to continue that, and they're able to pay in their share of the debt service without changing their rent because of this setup. So it's no increase in rent for Gardena, which is nice. We were able to add it into the financing, which we're going to see on the next slide is pretty, it's pretty good terms. And they also have some reserves if they need it to support this project. So we're going to talk about that on the next slide as well. So right now, Gardena has a very significant fund balance, like all of our sites, which is wonderful. We have a desired 10% reserve, which is actually way over what we're required to have, but we want to keep that because it really helps for cash flow, et cetera. But even with maintaining that very high reserve, very high compared to the statutory requirements, we're still about $2 million over that. So certainly we consider it a very good use of those reserves if we do want to use it to support this project. If for whatever reason the purchase price is a little higher, or if we want to support some of the work being done on the site, because, you know, by using the reserves in this way, it's a capital outlay use. So now I'm getting into accounting nitty-gritty, but you know, we're able to recognize the expenses over a long period of time on the books. And also it maintains our assets on our books. Whereas if we choose to spend it on some other types of expenses, you know, they're not ones that build our assets, if that makes sense. So it's a nice use of reserves to put it into the facility, as well as that a facility has a lot to do with a school's success a lot of times. Students and parents want to be at a safe, clean, comfortable place. So it helps with things like maintaining enrollment. Next slide. So this is a summary of the facilities cost per student as it will be with this new financing with EFF. Now, Lawndale is not included in that financing at all. We have a group called the Obligated Group. So ECHS Lawndale is not included in this transaction at all. They also happen to have the lowest cost per pupil for facilities because of their unique setup, being able to operate at Lawndale's building and those sorts of things. So they have the lowest cost per pupil. But Gardena, even with this addition to its property, is still going to be the next lowest per pupil. And then ECHSG, of course, is the highest because their property is quite expensive. But they're all within reasonable expectations for a per pupil cost for a facility in this area. Next slide. So here's a little bit more of the details about the financing. We're going to talk a lot more about this on the next board meeting, but we did want to make you all aware a little bit of what's going on. So you can see here, ECMSG and ECMSI currently have loans with Beneficial State Bank and California Credit Union, respectively, for their facilities. So the expectation is that we're going to take out those loans with this new financing. And you can see that the reason we're doing this is because, A, we have really favorable rates with this loan, and B, really favorable terms and amortization. So our terms on the Gardena and Inglewood loans, while Gardena, we have more time, Inglewood's term is coming up in the next couple of years anyway. So it's a little bit early, but not much. Like, we really needed to refinance this relatively soon. And then along with these, with this loan, there are some expectations from EFF. Some of them are, oh, whoops, can you go back? Some of them are already in place with our current loans. They're pretty standard covenants, like the financial covenants, a 1.1 debt service coverage ratio. We are required to have 60 days cash on hand at all times for the obligated group schools, and a fixed charge coverage ratio 1-to-1 at all the sites. And then also, if we want to take on additional debt, we can with their permission, but it has a higher debt service coverage ratio. So that's another reason we really wanted to just include this in the financing at this time, because we'll have a 1.1 debt service coverage ratio if we add it in this financing. If we try to finance it from outside, it's going to be a 1.2. So there are also some covenants around academics and enrollment, which we're still working out with them. But just so that the ECS board is aware, there are going to be some requirements associated with this financing. I'm not sure if I'm speaking to the slide or...
Allison, you're on mute, but you want me to...
Yeah, I wanted to give some time or space for some questions, if there's any questions or thoughts coming up before we make the recommendation.
So are you, so Allison, are you saying you welcome comments about this or just questions?
Questions, comments, thoughts.
Okay. May I?
Yes.
Okay. So for me, I mean, this is magnificent, right? Because this for me aligns with ECA's, ECS vision of valuing and protecting the environment. I still remember, like, I think one Allison's early vision when they founded ECHS was classrooms without walls, right? And even early on, they had that vision, how important that was. And so to see that this facility is so, they have so much less space than the other ones, you know, that's an issue of equity for those students there. But also you must, you know, you have to first have the educational space or this outdoor environment in order to teach, to show the students environmental beauty, in order to teach them how to appreciate the environment and ignite a desire for them, you know, to want to protect the environment. So for me, like, this is so critical to outdoor learning. And then finally, for me, this is a great opportunity to do some really good work around social, emotional, work for the students, because during this time we see how critical that was and how impacted our students were. So that just resonates even more for me in terms of how great this would be for those, for the students in Gardena.
Thanks, Kennedy.
All right, thank you, Kennedy.
Any other thinking or questions?
I'm so sorry. I'm going to keep us going quickly because there's several board members who have to leave, and we have voting to do. So I just want to appreciate that. I apologize. I got a text.
Yep. So I'll just say, you know, just in the interest of time, Farnaz, we recommend as a facilities committee that MCP enter into this agreement to purchase the property. And we recommend that Gardena work with Menlo 165th to negotiate or renegotiate the current lease agreement to include the site without increasing the projected the yearly rent. So this is a great opportunity to acquire a property basically without increasing the rents on the current school, which is fantastic. So just wanted to make sure, you know, everyone understands, you know, what we as a facilities committee are recommending as we move forward. So I'll turn it back over to Allison.
Well, I think that goes on the, it's now on the board agenda as an action item, right? So I'm going to turn it back over to Farnaz.
So
or to someone
you.
To make the motion.
Well, actually, this is included as part of our consent agenda.
Awesome.
So if you can look at consent agenda items A through I, and we can recommend approval of these consent agenda items, that would be wonderful, and we can move forward with this.
Yes. Okay. So per our protocol, first, I would ask a motion to approve consent items A through I.
So motion.
Kennedy, thank you. Do I have a second?
A second, Denise.
Thank you, Denise. And with that, I open up to any questions, comments regarding consent items A through I before we vote.
Yes, on the consent item E, approve the student handbooks. Just to make a quick amendation to take out ECHS Lawndale from that. So it's just going to be the other school that has the handbook.
Okay, so only Gardenia.
Yes.
Okay, duly noted. Any other questions, comments? Okay, so I would then move to the vote. Zena.
Aye.
Madhu.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Anthony, aye. Consent items A through I have been approved with the revision of E. Moving on to action items, A.
First, this one, I'm going to ask Sarah to do a really quick summary of it before we accept a motion.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. So because we're bringing this in front of you, wanted to give you a bit of an explanation behind it. So you knew we're doing our due diligence on our side and not simply taking on any flexibility we can get with regards to staffing. What this is we have legislation that allows substitute teachers, rather than their 30 days to stay in the classroom, they extended it to 60 days, and they're now extending it to 120 days because of the staffing shortages we're seeing across schools, and also the impact of teachers testing positive and having to go into quarantine and a lack of subs. There's just all around staffing shortages. So we are bringing this before you as a best practice to have you also sign off on it, make sure that you're aware that we're doing this. We only have one classroom that we're actively using this flexibility inside right now. It's a classroom that we've had a long-term sub in. We are actively recruiting for it. We've never stopped actively recruiting for it. And we are supporting that 30-day sub as if they're a full-fledged teacher. So they have instructional coaching and support and lesson planning and partnerships. They're not on an island, but we felt it was best to avail ourselves of this and allow the kids the continuity of a consistent human rather than pulling folks in and out, given that they don't have a permanent teacher at this time. So just wanted to give you a little bit of context before we put that in front of you.
Thank you, Sarah. Any questions, comments, concerns regarding action item A? Okay. May I have a motion to approve action item A?
I move to approve action item A.
Thank you, Madhu. Do I have a second?
I second, Denise.
Thank you, Denise. Zena.
Aye.
Madhu.
Aye.
Denise.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. Action item A has been approved. Thank you. I'll turn it back over to Farnaz.
So those are our board meetings that are coming up and committee meetings that are coming up. We look forward to having a longer conversation with you on February 24th. And with just a few minutes to close, just on time, I want to open up for appreciations, but I want to start this myself. I'm going to see you all. I want to sincerely appreciate Allison Diaz and Tracy for all the work that they're doing on the EFF effort. I'm blown away by what you're accomplishing here and on this property. Allison, it's taken some convincing for me, but it is definitely the right thing to do. Kennedy mentioned that it's an equity issue for our students because they're getting less land than our other students at other ECS campuses. It's really important to know that all of our students are getting a fraction of the average space per pupil relative to the state of California. Our schools are small relatively. So thank you for all your hard work on this effort. And Jeremiah, we skimmed over it, but we had a beautiful, clean audit again. And I wanted to appreciate your work on the audit. Oh, and one more. Beth has stepped in to be the principal again at ECMS Gardena. This is not easy. She comes in. She not only takes over for a principal, God bless, Dave has had a beautiful baby and is getting some time with his baby, but she also brings a critical eye and a lot of skill and expertise to this role. So I just want to appreciate all the hard work that she's doing in addition to continuing to support and coach the other principals. So huge appreciation for Beth.
So I just want to say my appreciation is to all of ECS. It is it makes me so proud to be part of this board, just because of the work you guys do and how progressive thinkers you are and how equity driven you are. It's just really an honor to be part of this organization. So thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you all so much. We have a minute to spare, so I'm proud of it, and an incredible appreciation for our board for being willing to be here. And thank you guys so much for helping to meet the timeline. So I hope you all have a wonderful evening. If anybody wants me, I'll stay on for a couple of minutes, but have a lovely evening.
Okay, we should vote to adjourn.
Sorry.
So I'll take care of that. But once again, everyone, thank you for your participation, your engagement, for the awesome job everyone is doing. It really is amazing each time I get on this call. So with that, do I have a motion to adjourn?
I motion to adjourn, Zena.
Thank you, Zena. Do I have a second?
Janina, I second the motion.
Thank you, Janina. Zena.
Aye.
Madhu.
Aye.
Travis.
Aye.
Janina.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
And Anthony, aye. We are adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a wonderful evening and a beautiful weekend.
Take care.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Bye. Thank you.